Weekly Podcast. I'm Jason Seifer.
And I'm Greg Pollack.
And this is episode 80, May 27th, 2009. The Rails Empty Podcast is sponsored this week by New Relic. Greg, I use New Relic a lot.
You do? How do you use it?
I use it to diagnose problems and performance problems in my Rails applications.
You mean performance problems?
Yes, performance problems.
Like real production performance problems?
Real production performance problems.
This sounds awful.
New Relic lets you see where exactly your performance is slow in your Rails application and fix it.
Well, I'm going to go right out there and buy it today.
You should do that.
How much is it again?
It's free.
No way.
They also have paid plans. They're a lot of money. Check them out at newrelic.com.
I'm sure it's worth every penny.
Worth more than every penny. It's a bargain.
This week, Engine Yard announced that they're taking over legacy maintenance duty for Ruby 1.8.6. Kirk Haynes is leading the team over at Engine Yard, and it should be interesting to see what comes of it.
Yeah, you know, I'm really hoping that they'll bring over some of the optimizations from Ruby Enterprise Edition or, you know, some of the performance applications that Joe D'Amato has been talking about, you know, from the Time to Bleed blog.
Yeah, there's some great patches over there. They should just give Joe commit access.
Yes, they should. You know, that man could scale a blank by blanking the blank. It's like a choose-your-own-adventure, only it's not really an adventure. It's more like a choose your own awkward comparison.
I figured you could come up with something on the fly.
If you're not yet in 2009 with everybody and you're still using something like Vim
and not using something like RubyMine
for Rails development, oh man, we're gonna have such angry listeners for that one. Emacs is better. Anyway, if you use Vim for Rails development, check out the Vim Ruby debugger, which actually lets you have an entire Ruby debugger inside of your Vim environment and gives you a whole bunch of great stuff. You start by doing rdebugger from Vim. It does require Vim 7.0 plus compiled with a few different things, but it looks pretty awesome for debugging anything to do with Rails inside Vim.
And who's that from?
This is from Anton Astashov.
Also, if you use Autotest in Vim, you should take a quick look at a screencast by Aaron Patterson showing off a hook he created inside the editor. Basically, he has a Vim parsed through the Autotest output file. So when you hit an error in your Autotest, you hit a keystroke in Vim and you're automatically brought to the line where the error occurred.
Wow, that's amazing.
That's neat.
Sounds like Vim is actually kind of cool. Way better than Emacs. I want to get on each side of this flame war before, okay, before the podcast is over.
The presentation videos from Scotland on Rails are now up and contain some great talks, but I need to sneeze.
Dude, you sneezed on my dog.
I totally just sneezed on your dog.
It's messed up.
Take that, dog.
So, anything good from those presentations?
Well, you've got Dave Thomas talking about the Ruby object model, Joe O'Brien and Jonathan Weiss doing his talk on advanced deployment, and a few other really good talks.
The Webistrano guy, correct?
Exactly. Also, a few talks on maintaining older Rails apps, such as Stephen Baker talking about avoiding the big rewrite, developing maintainable software, Pat Maddox talking about working effectively with legacy Rails code, and also Joe O'Brien and Jim Weirich doing their Ruby code review dialogue.
I love that one, by the way.
It's a good one.
They do a great job. Confreaks has posted their videos from LA RubyConf 2009. There's what looks to be a bunch of great talks, but I'm going to be honest, I actually didn't totally listen to them because, as Greg pointed out to me over IM, the audio is pretty bad. But if you can stand it, it looks like there's some great content. Just thought we'd give you a little heads up on that.
Yeah, but did you notice they're like all in front of like showroom cars?
I did not notice that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder where they were.
Okay, so Greg, are you familiar with using multi-Ruby to test your Ruby gems and libraries?
Right, where you can run them against a bunch of different Ruby VMs.
Right, like, you know, if you want to test something against Ruby 1.8, 1.9, JRuby, things like that.
Right.
Well, this week, Matt Brown put up a 15-line alternative to multi-Ruby, which lets you also, you know, test against the different versions of Ruby. But the thing is with this one, it lets you have the different Rubies as optional packages to be in different parts of your system.
Right, rather than installing a whole file system hierarchy inside a hidden directory to do multi-Ruby.
Right, this lets you put your Rubies where you want. That sounds bad. Anyway, to go along with that, we'll also provide a link to installing your Rubies where you want.
What was that subversion application we used to use for freezing our SVN externals? You know, so your code wouldn't go out to fetch other people's code on other people's servers every time you did a checkout or deploy?
Piston.
Oh, right, right. And I think there was Braid for Git.
Right.
Something like that.
Something like that.
But this week I found a new tool by Winton Welsh to keep track of your externals called...
Wait for it.
Externals.
Really had me on my edge, on the edge of my seat for that one. That's, right. How do you come up with that?
I don't know. It's all about starting with the anticip...
The anticip what?
Patient.
Whoa! I just Bruce Willis at the end of Sixth Sense.
So why don't you come up to the lab and see what's on the slab? Sorry, it's a Rocky Horror Picture Show thing. Maybe somebody out there will get it. Anyways, use externals just by creating an externals YAML file in your config directory where you put your external paths and to, you know, the Git repos. You can then freeze and unfreeze each of these paths as you need to from the command line, which makes it just like really simple to keep track of your externals.
So, Greg, I don't know about you, but my MacBook has two processors. Well, not two processors, but two cores.
Oh, wow, really?
Which is sort of like having two processors. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, that's great. How do you take advantage of that?
Well, you don't with Ruby. You just like you can, because I don't know if I mentioned this, but Rails can't scale. However, what? You don't agree? Anyway, however, if you're talking about running specs, this week Michael Grosser put up something on GitHub called Parallel Specs, which lets you, wait for it,
run your specs in parallel.
Using two processors.
Oh, hey, that makes sense. How is this different from Deep Test?
I don't know what Deep Test is.
Deep Test is a sort of, I think, a more fully featured testing sort of setup where you can have multiple cores running your test, even multiple boxes running your tests.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, but this is sort of the parallel specs would be good for on your local box, whereas Deep Test is, I think, from maybe running across multiple boxes. This week on the Engine Yard blog, they posted about 5 tips to scale your Ruby on Rails application.
Really small list, by the way. All 5 were... Don't use Rails.
Right, right. First up, you should cache and more cache. Obviously, you know.
You missed a cache.
I missed a cache?
Yeah, it's cache and more cache.
Well, that makes a world of difference.
Kind of like Vegas.
Right. Secondly, segregate data and data serving. Like, we're not just talking about maybe sharding your data, but also serving most of your, you know, image assets and static files from Amazon S3 or CDN like Akamai.
Gotcha.
Next up, minimize and handle external dependencies.
Oh, so you mean if you're pulling up RSS feeds or something, some other external web service?
Oh, yeah, don't rely on external web services being up all of the time, because that could screw you over.
Right. So basically in a situation like that, you could use Rain Henrich's How to Cache Anything with Active Support article and use the Rails cache to cache it.
Exactly. And number 4, tend your database and your job handlers.
What does that mean exactly? Tend my database. That sounds... kind of dirty.
Right. Oh, I think that's saying that scrub your database periodically for, you know, fields that are no longer being used so, you know, you can keep your database table small and fast.
The other thing to look out for with that is to use the Scrooge plugin to actually only pull the database fields that you need to when you're doing a query.
Yeah, that's good.
One thing to watch out for with the Scrooge plugin, though, it doesn't work with cash money.
Okay. And number 5, shard your unavoidably relational data.
Yeah, because databases are going to be pretty much your big bottleneck when you're scaling Rails, after Rails. And that was Engine Yard's 5 tips to scale your Rails app.
Oh, but also, don't forget, those videos that I made are pretty useful, I think, for people just learning how to scale and learning about all the different caching mechanisms. You know, those Rails Lab videos. Hey, Jason, do you hear that?
Do I hear what?
That music in the background?
Oh,
that could only mean one thing.
Only mean one thing. Well, it could mean 2 things. I think that A, there's a new foo plugin, and B, we need new foo music. Anyway, this week it's Curb Foo. Yeah! We're not sure whether or not we've talked about this on the podcast before, but Matt Wilson and Derek Kastner have made some changes to Curb Foo.
Oh, that's the wrapper for Ruby's Curb Gem.
Right, which is actually a layer over curl.
Oh, right.
So basically with the new Curb Foo, you can use it sort of like fake web, but you can use it to mock or stub out any external HTTP call.
Oh, that's nice.
For example, the example they give is to use like a Solr server. You can stub a response from there, and that way you don't have to worry about doing that for each time, like each line in your Rails app.
Oh, that's great.
Hey, so just a quick kind of cool note. There is now a TATFT mousepad available to remind you to TATFT while you're coding RUBY.
And what does that stand for again, Jason?
Test all the f***ing time.
Oh, right.
We'll provide a link
in the show notes.
Uh-oh, now it's time for... So you know how sometimes you want to make users verify their email addresses before you give them access to your web app?
Right. I pretty much hate that, but it sometimes makes sense.
Yeah, but what kind of sucks in that scenario is that you typically create, you know, a user object, store that in the database before you verify their email address. You know, you probably have a verified Boolean you always have to check, and in 2 years, you're going to have a bunch of users that, well, were never verified and are sort of clogging up your user table.
Right, but I mean, how do you get around something like that, you know, where the user may have already entered a bunch of information on a user form, you know?
I'm glad you asked that, Jason.
Well, I'm glad I asked that too, Greg.
One thing you might do is use Active URL by Matthew Hollingworth. Active URL works like Active Record, but instead of allowing you to store data in a database, Active URL lets you store data in a URL.
So we would apply that to email verification?
Well, what you could do is when a user fills out a signup form, you could store all that data in an encrypted URL, which you then use as a verification URL you email to the user.
So when the user clicks the URL, then it would get decoded on the server, and then and only then does the user model get created.
Exactly. So you don't need to worry about that verified Boolean or having unverified users filling up your database.
Because the user object doesn't even get created until they're verified. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a cool trick. And this is just one example where a secret URL comes in handy. So check out Active URL if you think this would be useful in your app.
So Greg, you know how last week we mentioned Ruby Toolbox, which provides like all the most popular projects on GitHub?
Yeah.
Well, this week Ruby Trends got a bit of a new look. Ruby Trends is very much like Ruby Toolbox, except that you vote instead of actually taking the data from GitHub to see which is most popular.
Wow. So you can see sort of what gems and libraries people are using.
Right. Nice. Well, voting on.
Right.
I think we need kind of a mashup of the two of them, to be completely honest. Oh, also kind of along the same lines, the Agile Web Development Plugin Repository has a new look.
Yeah, I saw that. It's nice. Peter Sinek wrote up a blog article this week entitled, Dear Railsist, Please Don't Be Obtrusive. Peter wrote up a very easy-to-read tutorial showing the difference between implementing Ajax in Rails the normal way versus the unobtrusive way using jQuery.
Nice. You know, I really like jQuery, but Rails just makes it too easy to write obtrusive JavaScript, even though it actually is really easy to write it unobtrusively in prototype.
Yeah, well, you know what? Here in Rails 3, they're going to be doing things unobtrusive out of the box.
Right. I'm wondering if it'll validate, though, because it's using HTML5 stuff.
I think it does.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
So this is also kind of a cool trick, even though it didn't make it into the cool trick section. But
no, sorry, can't be a cool trick. It's not in the cool trick section.
But Vidar Hakstad, you know, the guy who wrote about, you know, writing your own compiler in Ruby?
Yeah.
He put together an interesting blog post about creating a family tree using GraphViz and Ruby.
Oh, yeah, I saw this, but I already use Genie. You know about Genie?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a Rails app.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so just use Genie, I guess, is the moral of this story.
But if you need to graph any sort of trees that are kind of like family trees, this might be good to check out.
Yeah, check it out. We'll provide a link in the show notes, and he has all the Ruby code on there. If you use Mephisto for blogging and you want to switch over your comments into Discuss, which I know I do, maybe I'll do that this week.
Awesome.
The Astrails blog has an article on importing your Mephisto comments into Discuss. They call Mephisto's commenting engine kind of ancient.
Excuse me.
All right, so the Agile Ajax blog has a really nice article up comparing the different fixture replacement tools, four different ones, Factory Girl, Fixture Replacement, Machinist, and Object Daddy.
Yeah, you know, I read that. I thought it was really cool to see the different types of syntax side by side so you could see the differences between each library.
Yeah. Well, something interesting that I'm not sure if they actually write down on here, is that Factory Girl lets you use these different syntaxes now in the latest versions. You use most of the different syntaxes.
Huh.
Anyway,
check that out.
The point of all this is kind of that you shouldn't be using fixtures in your application.
Right.
No, I'm just kidding. Fixtures are still good to use, but once you leave fixtures, using factories are really awesome.
Noel Rappin, who wrote the article, I thought it was interesting that he seemed to prefer Machinist. So maybe that's worth another look.
So why did he say he preferred Machinist? But not enough that you should take serious. He says, I slightly prefer Machinist, but not by enough that you should take that seriously if one of the others look good to you.
So you've heard of that Toronto Rails firm called Unspace, right?
Yeah, the guys who put on the Ruby Friends last year.
Right, and it's also where Pete Ford and Hampton Catlin used to work. I guess Hampton's now working at Wikipedia.
Okay.
Anyways, besides having Future Ruby coming up on July 9th through 12th, they've been working on throwing a Ruby job fair on June 6th.
Wow. It's kind of cool that there's enough Ruby jobs to have a fair.
Apparently there is.
Cool.
But what's really awesome about this job fair, which is called employment.nil, by the way, is that no computers are allowed. So if you're a company and you want to attract candidates, it's time to break out the craft paper, glue, and scissors, and create a poster.
Nice.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. It forces people, I guess, to use more social skills rather than, hey, take a look at my code. Or I'm just going to sit here looking busy on my computer and hope that somebody hires me.
Mark G, we don't know his last name, and he... we just don't know his last name. He emailed us to let us know about Barometer, which is a multi-API for consuming different weather forecasting information.
Interesting.
Yeah, so basically, you know, there's a bunch of different weather services out there, and Barometer provides a common API, so you only have to use, like, one sort of syntax for interfacing with all of them.
Oh, that's interesting. That's sort of like, you know, GeoKit for geocoding, right, where they interface with a bunch of different geocoding APIs.
Yeah, and the other cool thing about this is, like, let's say one of the services is down, It'll go to the next one in the hierarchy to get the information.
Oh, that's awesome. So where exactly would I use this?
You know, if you wanted to know the weather.
Couldn't I just use the look outside gem?
Melt your brain.
This week on Melt Your Brain, we're going to take a look at a new feature of Ruby 1.9 called currying. And no, I'm not talking about some Thai dish. Currying is a concept from functional programming that basically allows you to take a function which has one or more parameters and regenerate that function with one or more of those parameters already filled in.
All right. Now, where would I use something like that?
Well, let's say you had three methods that all did similar calculations. Let's say the first 90% of the code was the same, but the last 10%, let's say that last line of the method was the only part that was different.
Gotcha. I think they call that a code smell, not having your code be dry.
Right, because you've got duplication going on. And one of the ways you could solve this is with a curry. First, you combine all three methods into a single method call that maybe calls a lambda on the last line.
And so you would send that lambda in as a parameter?
Right. You're going to send in the lambda as a parameter for each different method.
That actually seems kind of sloppy. I mean, if you have to send in the lambda to the method every time, probably would be a little bit slower.
Right. And this is where the curry comes in. Remember, the curry allows you to generate functions with some parameters filled in.
So basically, you generate three methods by sending in the lambda when you call curry, right?
Right, you call curry three times on the new method, each time sending in a different lambda, and you end up with three unique methods that were spawned from the same single method definition.
Interesting, and I'm guessing we bring this up because there's a currying article somewhere?
Right, up on Khalid Alhabachi's blog, he wrote all about currying, and he gave a really good code sample if you want to read more about it.
Here's a quick note. UC Berkeley has their one-day Ruby on Rails tutorial videos up. They go through creating a Hello World app, Just Enough Ruby, Basic Rails, Ajax, configuration, advanced active record, testing, and deployment. Again, the quality's not so good, but check it out if you got some friends who want to get a good introduction to Rails.
Louis Savina, maintainer of the Ruby one-click installer for Windows, and also a Ruby hero, I should mention, recently started up a pledgy to raise some funds.
Rage!
Recently started up a pledgy to raise some funds to create a decent homepage for the project. So if Ruby accessibility matters to you, you might want to pledge some funds to the project.
The rejected Melt Your Brain is from the X Combinator blog.
Rejected!
posted by Matt Pulver. And I'm not going to go through all of it here. Let you read the article for yourself. But he goes through using Inject to generate a Mandelbrot set.
Oh, interesting. What's the Mandelbrot set again?
In mathematics, the Mandelbrot set is a set of points in the complex plane, the boundary of which forms a fractal.
Did you just read that from Wikipedia?
No, I knew that off the top of my head. It doesn't matter that the Wikipedia page was up. Anyway, Matthew Pulver provides a kind of fun walkthrough of using Inject to go through generating the Mandelbrot set. Check it out if you're into that kind of thing.
Also, you may have noticed on the Rails Envy blog, I put up two videos which I filmed at the Orlando Ruby Users Group last week, where we've got Tyler Hunt talking about Chef, the DSL for doing configuration management, and Thomas Meeks doing a talk on Eucalyptus, which allows you to have your own personal cloud. So it's like Amazon EC2, but you can install it on your own servers.
And finally, Matthew Williams dropped us a line to let us know about a Mac-friendly version of AutoTest. What do we mean by that? Well, AutoTest Mac is a new gem that's not going to actually suck up your CPU resources, it's going to provide growl notifications, and it's going to actually use the FS Event Core, which Apple introduced with macOS 10.10.5. It basically will just monitor your file system for alterations and broadcast those. So you can get this by doing gem install autotest-mac and require autotest-mac on the top of your .autotest file. Also, he mentions if you have other growl-related code in your autotest, you should remove it to prevent possible duplicate notifications. And on that note, thanks so much for listening to the Rails Envy podcast. The Rails Envy podcast is sponsored this week by Mocra. You want to rejuvenate your legacy Rails application?
And I do.
Call Mocra as your first choice team, led by Dr. Nick. Mocra loves code, loves users, and they want to help you. Mention this advertisement to qualify for their largest discount consulting rate immediately. Thanks so much for listening to the Rails Envy podcast, and make sure to tune in every Wednesday for the latest news in the Ruby and Rails world. We'll be right back.